Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Joe Palca reporting. Afghans take to the streets in Kabul to protest Islamic State. Afghan security forces firing warning shots to disperse angry protesters in Kabul after some of them tried to storm the gate of the presidential palace. Demonstrators were in the capital protesting the beheading earlier this week of 7 civilians, including 3 women, by militants allegedly linked to Islamic State. Ayaz Ghul files this report from Islamabad.
The victims were members of the minority Shiite Hazara ethnic community. They were kidnapped by IS insurgents more than a month ago, and authorities found their headless corpses Sunday in the southern Zabul province. The violence sparked outrage across Afghanistan, leading to the massive protest rally. The demonstrators carrying the coffins marched through the streets of Kabul despite heavy rain and cold weather before gathering in front of the presidential palace. The protesters chanted anti-government slogans and demanded President Ashraf Ghani and Chief Executive Abdullah Abdullah step down. Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
Protesters also chanted down with the Taliban and down with Daesh, which is an Arabic acronym for Islamic State. Syria's military reports it has taken back a northern airbase that was under siege by Islamic State for 2 years. State-run television says Syrian forces entered Kuwiris airbase in Aleppo on Tuesday after nearly a month-long offensive. It says the military success was made possible by support from Russian airstrikes. This is VOA News. A 2-day international forum on peace and security in Africa ended with U.S. Africa Command's Deputy for Military Operations, Vice Admiral Michael Franken, predicting the eventual demise of the Nigerian insurgent group Boko Haram.
I believe that we will see, perhaps not a few months from now, but 6 months from now, a significant degradation in that scourge, which is Boko Haram.
The U.S. has provided troops to help gather intelligence on ways to defeat the Sunni militant group, and it cautioned that success will depend on how effectively the underlying causes of the insurgency, insecurity, and stability are addressed. A multinational regional force is being assembled to defeat Boko Haram. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has sworn in a 36-member cabinet that includes himself as the country's Minister of Petroleum. The ceremony on Wednesday in Abuja came more than 5 months after Mr. Buhari was inaugurated on May 29th.
Our new ministers must proceed to work speedily and do their uttermost to justify the confidence we have placed in them, not only by their conduct, but also by their performance in their various positions.
The president said he wanted to avoid mistakes of the past and find the right person for each job. Mr. Buhari said he will maintain overall control of the key oil sector. Nigeria is Africa's biggest oil producer, pumping more than 2 million barrels per day, and experts provide the bulk of the federal government's revenue. It's Veterans Day in the U.S., with President Barack Obama saluting the men and women of the armed forces and those who have served the country's military in the past. President Obama called on American businesses to increase their hiring of veterans leaving military service after tours of duty in Afghanistan and Iraq. In his speech, which was televised nationally, the president said the day of tributes will ring hollow if the country does not continue to support its returning heroes. Elsewhere in the world, it's called Remembrance Day. Now, this is Chaplain Padre Colin McLeod of the Royal Highland Fusiliers 2nd Battalion of the Royal Regiment of Scotland. He's serving in Afghanistan as one of the NATO forces.
I think the 11th of November has a lot to say to us about the justice of a cause, why so many have given their lives in the service of their countries, here in Afghanistan in particular, and across the world. And we remember that, above all, it was to defend the weak and protect the helpless.
Now, President Obama also took part in a great many traditional and somber observances today, including the laying of a wreath by the President and the First Lady at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier at Arlington National Cemetery. That's just across the Potomac River from the nation's capital. Joe Palca reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Ihis Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
The United Nations Children's Fund is warning that up to 11 million children in East and Southern Africa are at risk from hunger, disease, and water shortages as a result of this year's strengthening El Nino weather phenomenon. Kenya and Uganda are bracing for floods, while South Africa and Malawi are already grappling with drought.
That's VOA's Jill Craig reporting. Details coming up.
Also, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has sworn in a 36-member cabinet that includes himself as the country's Minister of Petroleum. And the French news agency reports police and military in Burundi are searching neighborhoods controlled by the political opposition for weapons.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Protesters in southeastern Nigeria are demanding the release of the jailed head of a radio station that advocates for restoration of the nation of Biafra and its independence from Nigeria. A civil war over the self-styled Republic of Biafra ended in 1970, but the cause has persisted for decades and remains a sensitive issue. Chris Stein reports from Lagos on the pro-Biafra movement's resurgence in recent years.
Protesters from the Indigenous Peoples of Biafra organization took to city streets in Nigeria's south-south and southeast regions this week, calling for the release of Nnamdi Kanu, director of Radio Biafra. He was arrested last month by Nigeria's secret police. A spokesman for the agency could not be located, but local media reports say Kanu was charged with offenses related to his station's broadcasts. A spokesman for the IPOB chapter in southeastern Anambra State, Uguchukwu Chinwuba, says the goal is independence.
We don't want to be Nigeria anymore. We want to be on our own.
45 years after the end of the Civil War, Chinwuba says people in the southeast have not benefited from being part of Africa's most populous country.
Everyone would know that what Nigeria have, like crude oil or resources of anything, comes from Biafra land. And we do not benefit anything of.
Sporadic pro-Biafra rallies over the past few years occasionally have led to arrests. The government banned Radio Biafra in July. Laja Odukoya, a lecturer in political science at the University of Lagos, says the protests are a symptom of Nigeria's economic problems. Like much of the rest of Nigeria, rates of unemployment and poverty are high in the southeast.
Biafra, for me, is not necessarily a situation whereby you have a secession in this thing, but calling attention to the dysfunctionalism within the state and the need to redress it.
The Biafran War remains a dark and controversial chapter of Nigeria's history. The three-year conflict killed over 1 million people, many of them from starvation. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has finally unveiled appointments of 36 cabinet ministers. Among major positions, Mr. Buhari has named a former banker from Ogun State in the south as finance minister. He named the members of his cabinet many weeks ago, but delayed identifying their individual responsibilities until today. Mr. Buhari is keeping tight personal control of the corruption-plagued Nigerian National Oil Corporation and identified the head of the state oil firm as his deputy. The Minister of Industry is a man who headed Nigeria's biggest private equity firm. The former governor of Lagos State was named Minister of Power, Works and Housing.
The French news agency reports police and military in Burundi are searching neighborhoods controlled by the political opposition for weapons. UN and US officials and others have warned about escalating violence in the country and the potential for ethnic conflict. Burundi's foreign minister told the UN Security Council Monday that his country is not in flames. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehis Wuhib, 10 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has sworn in a 36-member cabinet that includes himself as the country's Minister of Petroleum. And the French news agency reports police and military in Burundi are searching neighborhoods controlled by the political opposition for weapons and would like to hear your thoughts on our stories, you can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237.
The United Nations Children's Fund is warning that up to 11 million children in East and Southern Africa are at risk from hunger, disease, and water shortages as a result of this year's strengthening El Niño weather phenomenon. Kenya and Uganda are bracing for floods, while South Africa and Malawi are already grappling with drought. VOA's Jill Craig takes a closer look at El Niño and the impact this event in the Pacific can have on Africa.
Onesimus Wariri, principal meteorologist at the Kenya Meteorological Department, remembers when El Niño hit in 1997 and 1998, years considered the strongest El Niño on record since 1950, when scientists began recording reliable observations.
There was a lot of rain all over the whole country, which led to destruction of infrastructure, flooding, diseases, loss of lives. So 97 was a serious El Niño.
In 2015 is expected to be another serious El Niño, he says. El Niño is a warming of the central and equatorial parts of the Pacific Ocean. It occurs roughly every 2 to 7 years and can have major effects on weather around the globe, according to Tom DiLiberto, a meteorologist at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration in Washington, D.C.
When you see this anomalous warming of the ocean temperatures, it can kind of shift around where or how the atmosphere works in the tropics, which can kind of lead to a domino effect affecting weather and climate patterns really far away from the tropical Pacific Ocean.
During an El Niño event, East African countries tend to have heavy rainfall, while Southern Africa, along with Australia and Indonesia, usually experience dryness, even drought and wildfires. Ruiri explains.
What happens is that during El Niño, the weather pattern changes. And for East Africa, we have very warm equatorial Indian Ocean. And if Indian Ocean is very warm, due to evaporation of the ocean water, we have that water blown to the continental East Africa. And that's why we have a lot of rain in East Africa. But to the south, that denies them the moisture. So it tends to be dry in the Southern Africa.
But the predictions don't always come true. In 1997, for instance, expected dry conditions in Southern Africa never materialized. For all its potential for destruction, El Niño may bring some benefits, too.
Like in northeastern Kenya, it has been very dry. So we expect this rain. The community there can dig dams to harvest that water. We expect pasture to rejuvenate.
DiLiberto says this year could be the third strongest El Niño on record, but that determination cannot be made until early to mid-2016, when all the data is analyzed. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Recent torrential rains could result in large swarms of locusts developing in northwest Africa, the Horn of Africa, and Yemen. The UN Food and Agriculture Organization says those regions must be closely monitored over the next 6 months. The rains create the perfect breeding ground for desert locusts. Swarms can fly up to 150 kilometers a day. Keith Kressman is a senior locust forecasting officer for the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. From Rome, he spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about why there's a potential locust threat.
We've had a lot of very unusual rainfall, unusual in the sense that it's been very heavy for this time of year, and it's fallen in quite widespread areas. Rains in the end of October in northwest Africa, mainly northern Mauritania and adjacent areas of western Sahara, southern Morocco, and western Algeria. And then earlier this month, and just in the past 10 days, there have been two cyclones that have come through and brought heavy rains to the southern Arabian Peninsula and to the northern part of Somalia.
Now, have these heavy rains and storms been associated with the El Niño phenomenon?
Certainly, the two cyclones that developed in the Arabian Sea are associated with a phenomenon that's probably linked to El Niño. It's worthwhile to note that this year, in September, the waters in the western part of the Arabian Sea were the warmest on record. So this is one of the explanations that meteorologists have indicated as a cause of these two very unusual cyclones.
What about in northwestern Africa?
Northwestern Africa, it's a bit harder to actually say that this is attributed to El Nino. This was just an unusual rainfall event that happened to occur. Some areas received rainfall in a couple of days that normally they would not get in more than a year or so.
So explain why this could result in destructive swarms of locusts developing.
Locusts require rainfall for a couple of different reasons. The rainfall produces a moist soil, the sandy soils that the locusts need to lay their eggs, and after a couple of weeks, those eggs, they will hatch. The rainfall also makes the annual vegetation, turns it green, and the locusts need this annual vegetation for food and for shelter. So when you have this combination of good rainfall, moist soil, and green vegetation, then you have the potential for locust breeding. And we have to keep in mind that locusts increase about 20-fold every generation. So if a generation lasts about 3 months, so after half a year, we can be facing two generations of breeding and more than 500 times the locusts that we started with.
And that's enough for a swarm?
Certainly, yes, that's enough for a swarm. Normally, it takes two consecutive generations of breeding. So if the conditions are good, that could happen within a period of 6 months before good swarms can form.
Give us an idea of how many locusts are in a typical swarm.
There are billions and billions of locusts in a typical swarm. We take an example, let's say the swarm the size of Manhattan in New York. That swarm in one day could potentially eat the same amount of food that everybody would eat in Pennsylvania, New York, and New Jersey.
Now, I understand that these swarms would follow the wind. So what areas would be most affected if these swarms develop?
Well, if the swarms develop, mainly they're going to stay in place. As long as vegetation is green, the soil is moist. So that means we're expecting that locusts could be present in these areas of heavy rainfall probably for the next 6 months or so until about next spring. When those conditions do become dry, you know that the desert locust has this great capacity to just simply pick up and move to greener pastures. So it would have to first see how successful the breeding was, what level of breeding, and then we can make a better estimation of where they might move to.
Now, is there enough money for the monitoring and possible follow-up programs to eradicate the locusts? I mean, we saw what happened in Madagascar when not enough money was provided and those swarms developed into a plague.
Well, the situation, of course, in the desert locust countries is far different than that in Madagascar, mainly because FAO has been working with these countries for nearly five decades. And we've been strengthening gradually our capacity to not only monitor the locusts and report them on time, but also to undertake the necessary control operations when they find significant populations. So these countries are much better prepared and ready to tackle locust problems. But of course, these are some of the poorest countries in the world. So sometimes those locusts will just simply overwhelm the countries in terms of the resources that are available to manage them. At that point, then, FAO will step in an emergency capacity and work with the international donor community in order to supplement control operations that are needed. Just because that there's heavy, unusual rainfall doesn't automatically mean there's been a locust emergency. There have been cyclones and heavy rains in the past, and the locusts just simply didn't respond. But on the other hand, there have been cyclones that have led to development of locust plagues. So we take these events very, very seriously.
Keith Cressman is a senior locust forecasting officer for the UN Food and Agriculture Organization. From Rome, he spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
The EU began a two-day summit today on the island of Malta to address the migrant and refugee crisis. Member states are expected to offer about $2 billion in development aid to the African countries, which are the source of thousands of people who arrived in Europe this year. The EU is also discussing what to do about African migrants and refugees who do not qualify for asylum. Meanwhile, Austria predicts that more than 95,000 migrants will pass through its borders and move on to Germany, Sweden, and other EU countries this year. But Austria's interior minister says a growing number of migrants are deciding to stay in Austria. Also, the Slovenian military continues to construct razor wire fencing along the river border with Croatia. Officials want to block migrant passage because they fear Austrian officials will slow or stop migrants from entering their country and cause a backup in Slovenia. The president of Italy's Chamber of Deputies criticized Slovenia's effort to stop migrants with the new fence. Laura Bondrini said the EU needs to protect, not defend, against the arriving migrants. And Turkey says 7 children are among 14 migrants who drowned when their boat sank today in the Aegean.
The once expansive and vital Lake Chad has lost as much as 90% of its water in the past 50 years. Experts from the 6 member states of the Lake Chad Basin Commission met in Cameroon to put together a plan to save the lake that will be presented at the Paris Climate Change Summit in December. Moki Edwin Kinzeka has the story from Yaoundé.
The proposal from regional experts meeting in Yaoundé this week is to transfer water from the majestic 3.7 million square kilometer Congo River Basin to the vanishing Lake Chad River Basin. The Congo River Basin is the second largest in the world after the Amazon River. Experts say that could improve the lives of over 40 million people in the countries that surround Lake Chad: Chad, Cameroon, the Central African Republic, Nigeria, Niger and Libya. Swaibu Mohammed, environmental expert at the Lake Chad Basin Commission, urges world leaders meeting in Paris to take the proposal seriously. He says the neighboring Congo River Basin has enough water to help.
Le lac Tchad faisait 25 000 km² au cours des années 1960. En 1960, la population...
He says Lake Tchad's surface area has reduced by 90% from 25,000 square kilometers in 1960. But he says the population, depending on the lake for their livelihoods, has increased from 3.5 million to over 40 million inhabitants. He says that is not including the animals, plants and birds that also exert pressure on the disappearing lake. For the water transfer project to go forward, the governments of the Democratic Republic of Congo, the Central African Republic, and the Republic of Congo must allow the Lake Chad Basin Commission to use their territories and water resources. The experts say they await the green light in Paris. The project would cost $14.5 billion. No funding is currently available. Deepening poverty around Lake Chad is also linked to regional insecurity, in particular the cross-border expansion of militant Nigerian sect Boko Haram. Mana Bubakari, representative of the executive secretary of the Lake Chad Basin Commission, says the commission also plans to canvass donors for $80 million to create jobs for youths.
Les jeunes de ce bassin et particulièrement autour de ce lac Tchad, c'est des jeunes qui sont...
Bubakari says young people in the Lake Tchad Basin are joining the Boko Haram terrorist group because of lack of jobs and difficult economic conditions resulting from the drying up of the lake and the extinction of its resources that should have created livelihoods for them. The drying up of Lake Chad has been attributed to changing weather patterns and human activity. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Cape Town anti-riot police fired stun gun grenades at striking employees at the South African Parliament today. This is the third day of a strike by Parliament employees demanding higher wages. Most official business in Parliament has been shut down during the strike by the National Education, Health and Allied Workers Union. In other news, a South African judge has sentenced 8 Johannesburg policemen to 15 years in prison for murder. They were charged in 2013 with the death of a Mozambican cab driver who died in police custody. Evidence indicated the cab driver suffered serious injuries when the officers beat him in his cell. The judge called their action barbaric.
Mm-hmm. Aid agencies say there's a need to find long-term solutions for nearly 200,000 displaced people living in camps in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Three camps were closed in the DRC's North Kivu province last month, and as Nick Long reports from the provincial capital Goma, there's likely are to be more closures despite continuing insecurity in some areas.
The great majority of the estimated 700,000 displaced people in North Kivu are not living in camps and not receiving food aid. Nevertheless, donors are getting tired of paying for the more than 50 camps in the province, says Ben Adua, a spokesman for the International Organization for Migration in North Kivu. The donors have been funding the same things for a long time and funds are getting short, he told reporters. Part of the reason for donor fatigue is the realization that the number of people in the camps was exaggerated. Last year, after nighttime checks were carried out at 31 sites in North Kivu, the numbers at those sites were found to be two-thirds lower than initial estimates, according to a joint report by the organizations managing the camps in North Kivu. Some of that reduction would have been due to improved security, enabling people to return home, but the report clearly suggests that another reason was inflated figures. This year, five camps near Goma have been closed, and the people there have mostly returned to their home villages or resettled in areas near Goma. VOA spoke to a formerly displaced person, Jean-Pierre Habu-Gimana, who left the Lac Vert camp near Goma last month and returned to his village, Kimoka. He told VOA he's very happy to be back home because people did not eat well at the camp and washing was difficult, whereas life is much better in his village. He adds that he wants to thank the organizations who helped the returnees, but they also need tools like machetes and hoes, as well as seeds for farming. His neighbour, Faraka Songo, is vice president of the group of people from the Lac Vert camp who have moved to Kimoka. She tells VOA she and her family were promised seeds that have not yet arrived, and that makes life difficult for them because they depend on agriculture for their food. The seed distribution is the responsibility of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization and was supposed to have happened by the middle of last month. Ben Adua of the International Organization for Migration told VOA it's been delayed. Nick Long for VOA News, Goma.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni is facing his toughest challenge yet. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests as they explore the possibility of major opposition leaders, former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi and Dr. Kizza Besigye, joining forces in next year's Ugandan poll. That's next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.
When news is happening, VOA Africa is there.
Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Nairobi.
Victor Beatty, VOA News, Washington.
Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
For VOA News, I am Charlton Doki in Joba.
Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
VOA correspondents take you right to the center of events as they're happening. And this is where you hear it all on VOA Africa.
The Voice of America, VOA.